This is Jarvis Leatherby of the band Night Demon, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
Welcoming you to yet another edition of Focus on Metal. How we doing?
Doing great.
Awesome. We've kind of touched on this a little bit before in the past, before the album came out. We talked a little bit about, you know, kind of what it might sound like and all of that. And, of course, I'm talking about the Rock or Bust by AC/DC.
Yeah.
So I was curious to, you know, what you thought of it. You know, now that it's been out, we've had a few weeks to, actually more than a few weeks, to kind of really listen to it and digest it And through that, we've also gotten a little bit more press coverage of, you know, what really went into making it and all mm-hmm. that, a little bit more understanding of the album. Sure, things that Mike wished he could have discussed with us when he was talking to us, but really couldn't.
No, he couldn't.
So I was, you know, interested to get your take on what you think of the album.
I like it more than Black Ice.
I do too, as a matter of fact. And no, folks, I just sprung this topic on Richie literally like 30 seconds ago, so there was no prior discussion of this.
No, but I was hoping you'd ask me about the album, because they're one of these big, huge bands.
Yeah.
That I think they come out with an album every 5 or 6 years. I wasn't expecting a new AC/DC album.
Nor was I.
I thought after Malcolm's illness... And it had been, what, Black Ice is 2008, I think.
Sounds about
seven
right.
7 and 8.
Yeah.
7 or 8. I thought that maybe they'd just tour, do one farewell tour and knock it on the head.
Yeah.
And they decided to go in June and record the album. And they did it. They banged it out in a month.
Yeah.
Because Mike Fraser told me it was done literally in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And... And it came out in early December.
Early December, right.
And all we had to go on was the single Play Ball.
Right.
Typical AC/DC song.
Right, which was released like way in advance.
Yeah, it was for the Major League Baseball playoffs. 3 minutes, a typical AC/DC song. The thing I didn't like about the single when it came out was Brian Johnson sounded really good.
Yeah.
I thought that'd make or break it for me because... He's in his mid-60s now, and I think how I'd like the album or not like the album all depended on what his vocals were like. I thought he strained a lot on the last tour. There was a lot of stories out there that he was struggling at times. He even hinted himself that he didn't know whether he'd be able to do another record.
Yeah, because, he was pretty upfront about that. Yeah,
because
at that
if he couldn't give 100%, he said, no, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
The thing I like about this record is it's short. AC/DC albums aren't supposed to be like Black Ice. I think that had 15 songs on it. I know it's too many for a lot of bands, nearly all bands, but especially for AC/DC. I think with AC/DC, you want 10, 11 tracks, put it on and it's done. And you go on to the next band or next album. A lot of the tracks are on the 3 minute mark, which is great.
Yep.
The production's fantastic on it, as you'd expect from Brendan O'Brien and Mike.
Yep.
Rock, and again, rock or bust, rock the blues away, get some rock and roll thunder, rock the house. Like, really?
Yeah.
It's AC/DC, I know, but really? I think a standout track for me is, I love Baptism by Fire.
Uh-huh.
I wish there was another one or two tracks like that that go along at a bit of a clip.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of it, some of it is a bit mid-paced.
Yeah.
But there's some really good riffs on it. Title track's got a great riff.
That's a really great track. You know, I think that's one of those ones that is memorable. It's really typical AC/DC. That's what I liked about this is that, like, all the hooks were there. The tempo was right. The songs were memorable. And it was a lot of what was lacking on Black Ice. Black Ice seemed to come out, didn't seem to do much for me at all. But this album is just, like I said, it seems to hit all the right buttons.
Yeah, I think it's strong top to bottom.
Yeah.
I think it was some of the tracks on Black Ice, I can't even remember their names now. I haven't listened to that album in a long time. I played Black Ice a fair bit when I got it. And I think Classic Rock picked in their top 100, 200 songs or 100 songs since the magazine came out, they picked Rock and Roll Train as the best rock song in like 20 years. And I was, it's a great track, but when you look at that album, it has some high moments on it, Black Ice, but it has some kind of samey moments on it.
Yeah, it just, like I said, it just didn't seem to do much for me, as opposed to, you know, before that, when, you know, songs like Safe in New York City and stuff from the one prior to that.
Stiff Upper Lip.
They just really stuck with you.
Yeah, well, you know? Safe in New York City is one of the other songs. It's kind of a faster paced track.
Yeah.
I love when AC/DC do songs like that, like Fire Your Guns from The Razor's Edge.
Right.
Songs like that, when they do those, they do them really, really well. The new record, the only track I'm not mad about is Emission Control, the last track. It's kind of, I expected it to go out on a high, and it's kind of like, you know, it's one of these middle of the album kind of tracks, not a last song track.
Right.
But solid record, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
I'll take that. New AC/DC, not crap.
No, I mean, what's interesting about this too is that from what I understand, you know, the bulk of the songs that are on there are all stuff that were riffs that were kicking around that Malcolm had worked on with Angus. So,
yeah.
So his songwriting stuff is still there. So now you have to go back and think, okay, well, now what happens? You know, do they have another one in the tank after this? And if they do, what gets brought to the party at that point?
I hope they stop.
You know?
I hope they stop. This is it. Leave it at that. And I think Angus is nearly 60. I'm sure the other guys are. I know Brian is mid-60s. I'm sure Cliff.
Yeah.
And Phil, if he's still in the band.
All right. Got to cut in here for a second. A few things have happened since Richie and I sat down and had this discussion. And one of the things that happened was the answer to the question about who would be AC/DC's current drummer. And we now know that Chris Slade is back on the drum throne for AC/DC.
Are older than Angus. I think they should stop recording.
Right.
If they want to tour, I don't have a problem with them touring. But I think if Malcolm is not involved in the songwriting, I think they should just stop, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now, it's nothing to do with me. If they want to keep going and they still feel they're creative, then by all means, go ahead and I'll still buy it. But
well, it would be interesting to hear what Stevie brings to the table. I mean, he's really not that far away in age from Angus. And he's, you know, been jamming with these guys all his life.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that sound and all of that is not something like he's coming from the outside. And, you know, I think that there's probably still some great riffs that can be brought in. It's I think to me, it's the drums.
Yeah, true. Yeah. You want Phil around. Phil just has this rock solid beat.
Yeah.
Plays to the track, doesn't mess around too many fills
Like you said, I mean, a lot of this stuff comes down to tempo, right? They are pretty much more well known for their mid-tempo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So if, you know, you take a song, you know, a classic song like Shake a Leg, and it seems to be pretty fast, but when you really listen to it, it's still kind of more of a mid-tempo type of song. And if they had tried to speed that up at all, it just wouldn't have been the same song. There's always that choosing of the tempo that seems to be so important for what they do.
Yeah, you know? definitely. But I know they're playing. They've announced dates in Europe. I'm sure we'll get a gig around us at some stage.
Yeah, aren't they the last day of Coachella? I think.
Yeah, they're headlining.
The headliner,
yeah.
Right?
That's like a 4 or 5 day festival,
I think,
isn't it?
Three. Yeah, 3 day.
I know they've been confirmed for that. I'm sure they're going to do stadiums.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to be around here, especially during the summer.
Well, they're one of the last bands that can do that reliably.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
No matter where they book into, they're going to sell that stadium.
And they'll sell it on their own.
Yeah.
All right, got to cut in here again in case you're living under a rock and you haven't heard. On February 11th, AC/DC announced the Rock or Bust tour dates, kicking off August 22nd right here in Massachusetts at Gillette Stadium. They go from there August 26th in Rutherford, New Jersey, August 28th, Quebec City, August 31st in Montreal, on September 3rd in Ottawa, September 5th in Moncton, New Brunswick, September 8th in Detroit, the 10th in Toronto, the 15th Chicago, the 20th in Edmonton, Alberta, the September 2nd in Vancouver, BC, the 25th in San Francisco, and they're rounding it out on September 28th in Los Angeles. Oh, lots of big arenas. Those things should sell out. I do believe that the tickets have already gone on sale. If you haven't gotten yours yet, I would advise that if you want to see them, you get right on that. All right, back to the program in progress.
I never realized until I moved here how big they were over here. Like that back in Black Alden in the States is enormous. It's over 20 million, I believe, over here. It's huge.
Yeah, you know, it was a big selling album. I think I've got, you know, besides the original vinyl that I bought the week it came out, I think I still have like three other versions of it on CD as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah, it was a huge album. You know, for a lot of people, it was their introduction to AC/DC. Then there were other people, you know, like myself that had, you know, all kinds of vinyl from before that as well. Mm-hmm. So it was just another AC/DC album.
To a lot of fans, it's the last great AC/DC album. I think Brian Johnson era is, other than Back in Black, I think when you talk about the Bon Scott fans, I think they might say, yeah, Back in Black's a great album. But after that, it's, some of it's not so good. Fly on the Wall, Flick of the Switch, not great.
I mean, there was some I don't know what you'd call it, quality issues.
Yeah.
For a little while there. I mean, you know, for those about to rock.
Title track, you know, brilliant song.
Yeah, and you know, then, you know, the stuff they did like for, you know, Ball Breaker and things like that were also great tracks. But there was, yeah, a couple of albums there that were just kind of variable in what they were delivering.
Yeah. The Razor's Edge was a strong record and that had big songs. It even had, those songs were big even back home for me. Like Thunderstruck is a huge track.
Yeah.
Back home. AC/DC were one of these bands in the 80s that they were like Iron Maiden. They'd release a single, it'd go straight into the top 10, like two or three or four, and the following week it's gone because no one played it.
Uh-huh.
And over here, AC/DC is everywhere. You go to an NFL game here.
Sure.
And they always play like four or five clips of tracks between plays. You're guaranteed that their AC/DC tracks are amongst those every single game in any stadium in the States.
Yeah.
Like they're a huge, huge band over here. I think if they play here, I think I will go and see him. It's been, I haven't seen him since the Ball Breaker tour. I'd like to see him one last time. I think they're one of the best live bands around.
Oh yeah, definitely.
One thing I would be interested in knowing is Malcolm was the leader of that band.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to see, you know, has Angus stepped up to the plate there, or is it more of a democracy now? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that is very interesting. Because, yeah, he was pretty much the iron fist that nobody realized it at the time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people would naturally think, well, it must be Angus, but I don't think that was ever his personality.
Well, Malcolm was the older brother as
well. Yeah, yeah.
It's just an interesting question, I think, if someone asked one of them. I don't know if anyone's asked him that, but it'd be interesting to see what how that band interplays now. But maybe they're such a big band and they're so used to each other that they work it out in whatever way they do anyway.
I mean, you got
strong management.
Yeah. Yeah. It's possible.
You know.
But it is interesting, you know, just because I wanted to discuss it with you. I find it very amusing. You had the same opinion that I did that much better album. Really enjoyed this, you know, putting it on too and just cranking it and playing it. And it just overall, it just felt better than Black Iced.
Yeah. I gotta say as well that I've seen the video for Play Ball. It's crap. Yeah. Slice Like was made for like $50. And I'm thinking, I know bands don't really make videos anymore and they're not really played on MTV and VH1 don't really, well, VH1 Classic play videos, but the video's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen the video for In Rock We Trust.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
And that one there, it harkens back to the old videos. Was it Thunderstruck where they're in the big circle? No, it wasn't Thunderstruck, was it? It was
The Cage? With the cage behind them?
It was like a Mad Max almost type of video. They're in a round and all the fans are all like tier after tier of them like around the van. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So it harkens back to that where they're playing in the round with the fans around them.
Who's drumming on it?
And it's a very interesting video. You never actually see the drummer's face.
Right, it's not Phil Rudd then.
It looks like when you look, you're like, okay, it's Phil. Could be Phil. But whenever the camera gets just close enough for you to go, aha, it pans away.
It's Mike Portnoy.
It wasn't Mike Portnoy. But, I mean, it looked like Phil. I don't think it was, though, because why would they, like, pan away or fade or whatever else? But, it was kind of, they were just in the round. It was very apparent with the camera having the dolly around them and stuff like that. They didn't do any of the, you know, Stevie and Cliff coming forward and going back or any of that. But it was actually a pretty cool video. It, you know, really represented the song well. It had fans kind of in the old school cut off denim vest with patches and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think what you find now with a lot of bands, they'll make all the videos one after the other.
Yeah.
They won't actually make one and then go off and do whatever they do and then come back. So you're saying this looks like a different set, a different, completely different video?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And
interesting.
And, you know, I mean, what do you need? It's AC/DC. You don't need anything fancy anyways. You know what I mean? It's kind of this quasi-performance video and it does what it's supposed to do. It's a simple song and it's a simple video. And yeah, I thought, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I must check that out.
If they did it all arty-farty or something, I would have been like, nah, this isn't right for this. But this, yeah, it just did seem to work.
So what are you thinking on the live set? How many tracks off it?
I'm thinking, let's see, are they going to do In Rock We Trust?
They're short now, bear that in mind.
Yeah, they are probably going to do, I guess they've had some pretty affinity of doing Sweet Candy, which is kind of weird, but...
They play Ball, I'd say they'll do. They'll do three. I think they'll do three tracks.
Yeah, at least here in the States, they'll probably do Play Ball.
And then Back in Black off front to back.
Yeah, well, maybe. But, yeah. All right. Well, anyways, this week we got a busy show and lots to do besides this. But I thought, you know, let's just discuss a little bit of AC/DC here. So why don't we do a little track of the week and then move on to the main event.
Track of the week brought to you once again by our friends at Massacre Records. This week we are featuring the band Scanner. Just have their new release out on February 17th. This is Scanner's sixth full-length release and their first one since 2002's Scantropolis. So big time gap between the fifth album and the sixth album. If you look back through the history of this band, they've had all kinds of lineup changes, label changes. I clearly don't have enough time within the time frame of this show to go through all of the personnel changes this band has been through in the last few years. They have just gone through a ton of people, but I think if there are Scanner fans out there, they are going to be pretty happy when they hear this one. Great new album out. Great cast of characters on here. Brand new guy on vocals as well. Sounds fantastic. But as I said, this band's been around for a while. Put out their first release, Hypertrace, back in 1988. And then 89, Terminal Earth. And 95, Mental Reservation. 97, Ball of the Damned. And then, like I said, 2002, Scantropolis. And then nothing for years. And this year came out with The Judgment. I mean, they've been doing things between now and then. I think a lot of it goes back to, you know, changing people in the band and all that stuff. But again, great album. The Judgment just came out on Massacre Records. You can go and pick that one up well worth your metal dollars. I definitely think so. Got a great track for you this week by these guys. So direct from Germany, this is Scanner off their brand new one on Massacre Records called The Judgment. And this track is called Known Better. Track of the week, Scanner off their new one, The Judgment, out now on Massacre Records. I think I said this a show ago or two shows ago, but Massacre is definitely on a roll with the releases. Here's another great one for you. So we've got a great guest tonight. That would be Jarvis Leatherby from the band Night Demon. These guys are on Century Media. They just put out their brand new album, Curse of the Damned. Came out in Europe on the 19th and North America on the 27th of January. So we've been hooked up with Century Media for a while. And a lot of what's on CM, you know, isn't really within Richie's ballpark on, you know, the average day. And there's a lot of CM artists that I happen to like. Not all of them. There's some that kind of go more to the extreme that I'm not really digging, but I definitely have a lot of CM distro stuff here at the house that I've bought. So even though we've been associated with Century Media for a while now, I know you guys probably have noticed that we really haven't mentioned them or had any guest on the show, but you know, Richie texted me and he's like, holy crap, you got to hear this brand new album by this band. It's, you know, it's, you're going to love this thing. And he was all over this album. So, you know, he says, hey, if I can get one of the guys to come on, you want to do it? And he's like, sure, if he's this excited about it. And I hadn't even really heard the album yet. And just like Richie, I was totally blown away with this. Of course, everybody knows I love New Album, and these guys are really doing New Album right. Just really good stuff. So why don't we just kick back and listen to our talk we had with Jarvis Leatherby from the mighty Night Demon, and maybe you'll come away wanting to pick yourself up a copy of Curse of the Damned as well. And if you do, you can get it right from the band, or you can get it on CM Distro, and you can hook up with all of that at nightdemon.net. Also get all your other Night Demon merch as well. But all right, enough with this. Let's kick it back and listen to our talk with Jarvis of Night Demon.
It's amazing, but Richie found a band that is definitely 100% up my alley. And of course, across the board, I think everybody listens to this show. If they haven't heard of this band yet, when you hear about these guys, you're going to absolutely want to go out there and get their brand new album. Of course, I'm talking about the band Night Demon. We are on the phone tonight with the one and only Jarvis Leatherby, the vocals and the bass behind Night Demon. How we doing?
Doing fantastic, man. Doing really good. Just wrapped up this tour here with Skullfist and Elm Street in the States. We got 2 days off here at home trying to get stuff together before we head to Europe tomorrow. We'll be up there for about 10 weeks. The album came out yesterday. It's been getting some great reviews, and we did a whole pre-order thing. We had some exclusive blue vinyl that the fans really picked up on. So we spent the first half of the day at the post office today, which is great, you know. But you know, bringing 200 records in there, and the line is just out the door, and people are pissed, you know. But we had to do that, and, you know, we'll be doing some more touring here in the States and actually coming back to your area in the summer.
Awesome.
Probably June. I would say June we would be back in New England.
Yeah, well, Jarvis, up until about a week or 2 weeks ago, I'm sure you're getting asked this a lot. I never heard of you guys, and Century Media sent me the album, and I put it on, and I was, like, completely blown away. It was new wave of British heavy metal sounding album. And it just sounded fantastic. And, can you just give us a brief history of the band?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Thanks for the compliment. You know, we're a fairly new band. So we've all been playing for years. I mean, we're in our early 30s, you know. So we've been in the scene for 20 years and stuff. But this Night Demon's a new band. We started actually in 2011. Myself and the guitar player and our original drummer, we just kind of got together and said, you know, like, we were the only ones who liked new wave British heavy metal that we knew in Southern California, which is, it sounds crazy, but it's true. You know, like, it just, nobody out here ever cared about that. We grew up on it. You know, all roads lead to Metallica and Iron Maiden. You know, those were the accessible bands when we were growing up, and we got influenced by the bands that influenced them. You know, we realized why they were influenced by these bands, because they were so great. So we, you know, it was our goal to go in and do, all we wanted to do is make a 7-inch EP. We wanted to write the 4 best new wave or British heavy metal inspired songs that we possibly could and put it out under this Night Demon name. And, you know, we were actually going to put it out and put, like, you know, copyright 1979 and just kind of put it out and just go like, hey, man, here's a band you never heard kind of thing. So it wasn't a serious thing at all. We wrote the 4 songs and 4 rehearsals, and the 5th rehearsal was the recording of our EP, you know? So what happened was we sat on it for about a year and a half, and we were doing other projects, and the drummer moved away to go to college and stuff. And, our friends around town were just like, man, you guys got to do this band. I can't stop listening to these 4 songs. You got to do this band. You got to see it through. And for us, it's like, you know, nobody gives a shit about what's going on here. You know, it's not extreme metal. It's not, you know, we're not yelling at our audience. That's what people want these days. At least so we thought, you know. So I sent it out to a blog, a New Wave of British Heavy Metal blog in Europe. And I just said, hey, you know, give us your thoughts on this, just some feedback. We just want to know what you think. And before even saying anything to us, they just posted a link and said, like, my God, you got to hear this. And, you know, the next day, label offers started to come in. And, and these were smaller garage-run labels, but they were worldwide. And it was amazing, you know, like the power of the internet. Say what you want about it. There's a lot of negative things that the music industry says about it. But if it wasn't for that, I mean, we would definitely not be doing what we're doing today. But so that's how it happened. You know, we basically did not plan on being a band for the first year and a half. And then we got out there and started playing some shows. We broke in LA, which is something that, you know, in my lifetime, I've never been in a project that made that happen. Usually it's the Molly Cruz. It's like the real over the top stuff or the real, real commercial stuff breaks in major markets, especially in LA. But we tapped into this underground metal scene there. And, you know, we started out having to play with a lot of very extreme metal bands, black metal bands, death metal bands, grindcore and stuff like that. Cause that's predominantly what was around the underground. But for us, it was cool because, you know, like, all the old school guys, if they're into black metal or whatever, they had to start somewhere, and they usually started with the kind of stuff that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And as far as the kids go, they've never even heard anything like this. For them, it's like it's a brand new thing. Like that they've never even, it's totally foreign to them, and they like it. You know, I mean, we try and write, we serve the song. You know, we know a lot of bands, we play with a lot of bands that are amazing musicians, virtuosos, and like. You know, we're not hacks, but I mean, like, we focus more on the songwriting, and you know, we have some kind of pop sensibility to our music, I would say, at least in the structure. We try and keep our songs, you know, under 3.5 minutes, and I think people gravitate towards the hooks and stuff like that, so you can't help but like some of it. It's kind of infectious.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we were doing that stuff, and we got a call to play Keep It True Festival in Germany, which is like the biggest metal festival out there, at least on an underground level, you know. Mm-hmm. So all credibility involved, that's the one you got to do, you know. So we got asked to do that, and about a year before it happened, so we kind of cut our teeth, you know, out in Southern California playing live. You know, we had done a small run with Diamond Heads and Raven. And we went out to Europe and did that, and we ended up getting on a couple other festivals. We did 6 weeks of shows out there completely DIY by ourselves, and it was a great success. Got picked up by SPV Steamhammer out there for Europe, and then came back home, and, you know, we got the Century Media thing going on here. So we got two labels working for us, which is actually, it gets confusing at times, but it's actually a really good thing now, because, you know, one guy pushes the other. It's like, hey, look what these guys are doing, you know?
Right.
But they're starting to communicate on a higher level, and it's working out well.
Yeah, now there's been a lot of, like, ever since the new wave of British heavy metal, there's been, like, God knows how many different styles of metal, and yet you've come out with a new wave British heavy metal sound and record. How do you avoid putting in all the other styles into your music? Like, do you do that consciously, or do you just write the songs and they come out like that?
I grew up playing, you know, thrash metal and this kind of metal, you know, classic heavy metal, and nobody was into it, man. I mean, we grew up in the hardcore punk scene, and I did it all from the time I started playing music in junior high school until after high school. And then, you know, I started getting into other styles of music because, you know, I just wanted to expand as a musician, first of all. But second of all, the metal scene was just, it was just too aggro for me. It was going down the wrong road for me, you know. And I couldn't relate to it. And I wasn't into the rap metal thing at all. Like, at all. I really could not relate to it. You know, I like, actually, it's funny, I did play in a cover band once with, we did Bring the Noise, and Chuck D, you know, came out with us. He lives down the street from me, so that was cool. But that's as close as I get with it. So anyway, I found myself, you know, when I was playing in other styles of music, I would naturally, when I would write songs, I would naturally just write a new wave British heavy metal real quick. Just like off the top of my head, it would just come out naturally. So to be doing it now for real is like, yeah, it is a very natural thing. But here's the thing. When that scene was kicking off and it was alive and well, you know, I was just being born. So I do have the influence of all the music that I grew up with through the years, you know, in my DNA. And that can't be avoided. You know, so we were around for the Metallicas and the Iron Maidens and saw their growth and, you know, some their downfall, and also, you know, or whatever avenues they ventured into, at least, you know, different kind of stuff. And, you know, I always thought that, like, I don't want to, you know, with Night Demon, you know, we really just want to stay what we are. You know, we do want to grow and evolve as a band. And you can hear that from the EP to the record. But, you know, there'll be no load or reload with this band. I mean, I always think if you want to do those kinds of projects, like, you should do them as a human being, and, you know, but I don't think it belongs in the context of a Metallica or a Night Demon kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely, you know, there is an influence from all different styles of music through the years that I grew up listening to. But I mean, I listened to a lot of new wave or British heavy metal stuff when I was a kid, like pre-internet. Anything I'd get my hands on. I used to get old copies of Sounds in the mail. I should do, you know, I was doing tape trading in the 90s with people, you know, still doing cassettes and stuff like that. But it was never bands that were coming up on the scene because there weren't any.
Yeah.
It was just old stuff, you know, it was old stuff. And that was the only way you would ever find out about that, you know. If I ever got a newspaper and somebody was in the newspaper, like, I held on to that thing and I reread it throughout the years, you know, because we just didn't have those kinds of tools there.
Yeah. I'm definitely old school new album kind of guy. You know, I'm in my 50s and, you know, I have all the singles and all that and totally into it. And I hear you guys. And the first thing that got me that wow, these guys really have it is the fact that I hear fuzz. I don't hear distortion. I hear fuzz. And all those guys that were doing it back in England, back in the 70s, they were all doing it with, like, you know, tone benders and whatever fuzzes available at that point in time. And I could just
just as soon as I heard the guitar tone and stuff, I'm like, all right, they're using fuzz. And it was like, they've really listened to this stuff. And it was so great to hear that. And it was used really well, too, that you guys didn't overdo it or anything. So a lot of people listening may not have any idea, you know, what they're hearing for it. But I was like, oh, psych, they're actually using fuzz tone. And that told me that you guys really were folks that were absolutely into this kind of music.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. I'm glad you mentioned that and you recognize that. You know, a lot of people are not musicians or don't know about that stuff, which is fine, which I actually like because, you know, when you're in a smaller band, everybody's a musician. You know, right. So nobody's a fan, they're just another band. but anyway, you know, when we recorded this record, we did demos for the songs last year and we really extended ourselves on the production and just to see what we could do. Mm-hmm. And when all was said and done, we're like, man, this actually sounds like a great album, just the demos. But we didn't feel it was a correct representation of Night Demon whatsoever. I mean, we're a three-piece band. So when we did this album, Curse of the Damned, we went into a studio for 3 days. We didn't use any headphones. We didn't use any click tracks. We use all, you know, amps from the 70s, Marshalls. I play through guitar cabinets, you know, and we just went in and did it live. One guitar track. We overdubbed some of the solos and the vocals for continuity reasons, you know.
Yeah.
But we didn't layer stuff, you know. I mean, even you hear like some of the modern bands like Pantera and stuff, you know, Dimebag was doing like 6 guitar tracks, just rhythm guitar tracks to get that heaviness, you know, and I get that. But I mean, we wanted to stay very true to what we sound like. And Night Demon is a band, not only that, you know, did our EP take off and have some acclaim, you know, especially in Europe, but we're a band that broke from the road. You know, we're a band that people saw live and said, fuck, you know?
Right.
So we wanted that to carry over as closely as possible on the album. And the only way to do that was to just come in with that energy and, you know, not use a metronome, not, you know, just go in and get the feel down. And there are a couple of mistakes on the record, and I really don't regret them. I don't have any regrets. Like, the feel was there, the vibe was there, and it transfers over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, like, old school Diamond Head, if they corrected all the mistakes.
Right,
it would have ruined it for me, absolutely.
Exactly. And all this, you know, I think the main thing missing in music now, with all the technology as great as it is that human element. Mm-hmm. Want to connect with your listener, you know, you need to have that, and I think it's essential for us to always have that and to not overthink things and not go into the studio for months on it. I mean, even some of the most classic metal records, like, you know, some of these guys were in the studio for 4 months, man. You know, it's like, and it's on an 8-song record. It's like, I couldn't imagine that. You know, we move really fast and we do things really fast. We do put a lot of quality and thought into what we do, but we like to move on to the next and kind of keep things going. And, you know, we're going to be in Europe already writing for the next one. So, nice. You know, but anyway, yeah. So, thanks for noticing that stuff, because it is something that is really important to what we do.
Yeah. One of the things, Jarvis, I want to ask you about is, when you look back at a lot of the classic heavy metal bands, they all have two guitar players, and yet you only have one. Is that, did you ever think of getting a second guitar player in?
Yes, we have. And that's a question that's been asked a lot of us. The main reason why we didn't start with a second one is just out of necessity. I mean, like I said, I knew two other guys that were into this stuff. And not only were they into it, they fully understood this music. And that's what I wanted. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't even set that I was going to be the vocalist. You know, it was just, okay, what do we need to jam? We need bass, a guitar, drums, and vocals. That's it. That's all we need to jam. So we just did it, you know, and essentially, you know, the EP was a demo of guys that have been jamming, you know, 5 times. Mm. That's it. So, I mean, what it's done for us is the reason for having a second guitar is to beef things up behind the solos and to have harmony leads, which is the classic staple in metal. However, you know, being a 3-piece, it's really forced us to be kind of like innovators in a way. I mean, my bass sound is like a huge guitar. Hmm. It's totally distorted, but it has a lot of low end. We set up a certain way on stage and use certain things that really fill it out, which I won't say because it's kind of a secret. But I mean, that's what we do. And also the major thing that we do, if you listen to our records, is we do harmony leads between the guitar and the bass all the time. And that's become like sort of our signature. So not having that second guitar, it's forced us to become more creative in a way, you know? And, you know, the aesthetic on stage that we have now, the guitar player is left-handed, you know, and yeah. We play flying Vs exclusively, so they fan out. We call it the wings of metal. But people comment on that all the time. Oh, I love this symmetrical look, you know? And being in a band, I've been in bands my whole life, you know, and being in a band with two other guys is the best thing in the world. It's so easy to stay on the same page, to stay on the same level, and get everybody together and reel everybody in, you know, and have a democracy, you know, it works really well. So there's a lot of reasons why we stuck with it, but you know, we still get that question all the time. Yeah. And a lot of the Germans are really honest about things, you know, like, you guys are the greatest band since blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you had a second guitar player, you would be even greater. And it's really holding you back, you know, things like that.
See, I think that it's great the way you guys have it, because like with the hooks and stuff you got in the songs, part of what brings them out is the space that's in there, you know, and things like when you do those stops and the turnarounds and things. I just feel like when you got three people, it's so clean the way you do that. And if you added that fourth element, I just think it would seem busy to me.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And you know what? If you guys ever get a chance to see us live, I mean, we're like Motorhead loud, you know, and like really adding a second guitar is just going to make everything buddy.
Yeah.
And you know, the weird thing is Brent has a really unique style of guitar playing.
He does. You know what? Know what I noticed in his playing is like, he's got the really cool Nawabum hooks and all that, but then it's almost like he throws in a solo that could have been written by Ace Frehley. It kind of tripped me out the first time I noticed it.
he's a huge Ace fan. That's like the one button he has on his guitar strap. You know, like we have a rule in Night Demon since we started, you know, like, I mean, everything was calculated with us, the image and everything. It's like, we don't wear any branding on stage or in photos ever.
Yeah.
Like even if, I mean, I wear band shirts and all that shit all the time, but like, we just decided to never represent the band that way. Cause I hate when you see band photos and, you know, guys always wearing another band's shirt and you automatically would associate it with them, you know?
Yeah.
Like we're the band, man. We're not the fans. We're the band, you know? Yeah. So that's what you see, is you see us and that's it, you know? But yeah, that's the one thing he has. He's got a huge Ace Frehley face, you know, on his guitar strap. But yeah, he is a very unique player.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, 80% of the guitar players that we know personally that are doing stuff in metal, they're better than him. They're much more accomplished players than him. So to bring somebody like that into the band would change the dynamic completely. Mm. And he's great at what he does. And what he does is special in its own way. And I think it would really, hurt us as a band. It would really just change us.
Yeah.
You know, it would change us in a negative way. Cause I just don't think we need it. I mean, like I said earlier, like for us, like simplicity is the key. Serving the song is the key. And we want to write, you know, classic songs. We want to write modern classics. We want to write songs that will hold up with these old records and go head to head. And now it's like, it's a great time for us because, you know, we toured with Raven for 2.5 months. We played with them in Europe. We're going to play with them in Europe again in a couple months. So it's like, we played with Angel Witch, Holocaust, Uli John Raw, all these older bands are recognizing us, and we're like hanging toe to toe with them, you know?
Yeah.
And that is like, I mean, if I could flash back to being 13 years old, I mean, I would have never dreamed this, you know? And so now I'm just in my 30s living my childhood fantasy, and I'm loving every minute of it. And being able to see these bands, just to be able to see them, because I never got to see them when I was a kid.
Right.
Just being able to see them now. And now it's like I'm peers with these guys. And it's a whole new level of appreciation in my life.
Yeah.
And I
definitely, I mean, to me, I think if you got this accomplished guy in there, I mean, your sound, the tone that you've got and the tone on the guitar and everything. I mean, to have someone who's going in there doing like raging 32nd note legato lines, it wouldn't fit. And for one thing, if we try to do it with the same kind of tones you guys have, it would just be this giant like mud slick behind you. I just think that
absolutely
space and everything that you've got and you know, even the tones out of your bass. I'm curious now with your bass, is that a Seymour Duncan pick up on your bass?
No, you know, those guys approached me about like an endorsement, and I thought, you know, Seymour makes a pickup that has a custom pickup with them, and I always liked his bass, but I decided not to use it. No, I use these like these DiMarzio P bass pickups that were made like in '81.
Okay, yeah,
they come from Japan. They're actually I have certain pieces of equipment that I seek out and collect.
Mm.
Like the bass head I use, you know, I use a 74, a Trainer YBA-3 master volume.
Don't
and like I, every time I find one, I buy it.
Yeah.
You know? And my bass is, I use a 1981 Japanese Vantage Flying V bass.
Mm.
And every time I find one, I buy it. You know, I have to, because they're just so hard to find.
Yep.
And, you know, the vintage stuff can be temperamental too. So you got to have a backup and stuff like that, you know, but it's cool. You know, it's cool. Like to find your sound. It took a long time, but I definitely found it with this band. And, you know, I'm happy. And it's definitely the less is more approach, but I like to have my stuff. You know, when we go to Europe, we have different backline there and we have to make stuff work, but we're able to tap into the sound that we have. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jarvis, as someone who's writing old school classic metal songs, I'd be interested to hear your opinion on what the likes of Iron Maiden and Saxon and all the new album bands are doing now. Like, are you still as big a fan of their stuff now as you were back in the day?
I would say Iron Maiden, you know, I've followed the band for so long and they are really the gold standard of heavy metal. I mean, we model our career after those guys. Every time we get an opportunity, you know, a lot of things hinge on money. We decided when we started this band to never do anything for money ever, no matter what. And what would Iron Maiden do if they were offered this? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, I'm a huge Kiss fan. Kiss musically is a huge influence on me, but I would not do anything that those guys have done. You know, I mean, like they make the worst decisions and they still continue to do that for money,
right.
You know? So, but musically I would say, you know, I still like the Maiden records. I think they've dumbed it down a little bit. I think their intros are too long and their songs are too long and they have a lot of clean stuff going on, which I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I just think there's a whole lot of it now, and every song is this epic thing when I just want to hear them write a Wrathchild right now, you know?
Yeah.
But I have tons of respect for Maiden, and they can do whatever the hell they want, you know?
Right.
Saxon, great, man. Every record those guys put out is awesome. They're still amazing live. They're one of the best live bands to see. I highly recommend it for anybody that's into any kind of hard rock and all. You'll be floored. The newer members in the band are great, even though they're not that new. You know, I mean, it's still, but Biff can still sing. They still have the presence. They still have the attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could tell when guys get older, you know, they go to they get the Macy's old rocker fashion, you know, the print all over t-shirts and stuff. And like, oh, this is cool. Cool hip rocker stuff. You know, they kind of fall. I remember I met Biff once and I wanted to give him a Night Demon shirt. And he's like, it doesn't look like it's from the '80s. Right. And I said, well, kind of, you know, it's kind of cool. It's simple and cool. Like how things were, you know, and it's like, oh, I don't know if I'll wear it, you know, and he's wearing this shirt he's wearing like a Ed Hardy shirt, you know? And I'm like, okay, you know, but I have a lot of respect for those guys. The new Satan album is amazing.
Oh, awesome. That thing is freaking
comeback
awesome.
Record I've ever heard, which is surprising to me too, because the new Blitzkrieg is not good in my opinion, you know? So, but I don't think, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really like anything that Blitzkrieg really put out, or it wasn't really over the top except for that EP, you know, the first EP. But yeah, you know, a lot of these bands, like, you just got to let them be who they are. If people get critical on it, but one thing I will say in regards to Krypton, it ties in with this question and kind of ties into what I said earlier. You know, we really have a responsibility to our fans, and our fans really are the lifeblood of this band. And that's the reason why we've been able to tour 9 months out of the year. They really do support us. So they're always on our minds, and there's nothing that we would ever do in this band without thinking about them first, you know? And some of our biggest supporters are like radio guys and journalists and stuff. And these are the guys, I mean, as you know, many of these people just do it for free, for like the love of the music, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And some of these guys who have been around since, you know, these are the guys that watched Metallica's career, right. And they're still doing it, you know? And they're like, this one hand washes the other, you know, you gotta cross promote, you gotta help people out, you gotta help your fans out, this stuff like that. You know, we've never considered even doing a Kickstarter or anything like that. We're not complainers. We're not beggars. You know, we put out a high quality product. We put out the best damn merchandise, and we put on one of the greatest live shows. I mean, if we can't make it on that, then we shouldn't be doing this, or we need to change things up, you know? So that's kind of the way that I see it. And when I see these bigger bands, you know, later in their careers going, oh, well, I'm older and I want to change it up and do this. Like, you can do that. I just don't think there's room for it in the realm of what you created. And, you know, the monumental steps that you took in changing a generation in heavy metal, that the legacies of these bands, they need to be protected, but they're the ones that are fucking them up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a fan talking here. And that's, as a fan of these bands, I want to honor our fans in the same way.
Yeah. Well,
if that makes any sense at all.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it does.
Okay.
And of course, you know, you mentioned merch and all that. So, you know, why don't you give a shout out to your website where people can go and find out about your tour, about your merch, order the new album?
Yeah, nightdemon.net. It's pretty simple. I mean, we have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff, you know, and we have a lot of followers and we post on that stuff daily, sometimes multiple times a day because we have so much stuff going on. But, you know, I always think it's important for bands to have a central location that they can control,
right.
You know, because the social media things, they change all the time. I mean, remember MySpace? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I invested so much of my life into MySpace, and then one day it was just gone, you know? So it's just sad because some bands all they have is a Facebook page, like bigger bands. It blows my mind,
yeah.
You know? Or their website is some kind of like Tumblr blog or something. It's like, no, like we need, you know, we want a place where we can document the history of the band and what's happening. And, you know, you can go on I hate going to bands' websites and look up tour dates and it says no date scheduled and that's it. You know, if you go to our site, look at tour dates, you can see all the upcoming dates. You can see every show we've ever played and the flyer that was with it. You know, I mean, stuff like that and what we got coming up, you know, what we have planned, you know, even tentative stuff.
Yeah. It was pretty cool looking on your site and seeing all the flyers. That's like one of the pages we have on our site it's basically just a page of tons of tour flyers because they're really cool just to look at, but to see how, you know, all the bands and who played what and all that. And it was really cool to go up and see, wow, these guys have got all their tour flyers. Just great to look through all the stuff you were playing, who you played with and all that. Just a great thing to have up there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and earlier in the early days of the band, you know, it was hard because like we were just trying to line up stuff constantly. So it's like, oh man, like, you know, you got the Diamond Head show that's coming up, and like it's up there for 6 weeks, and you're like, God, you just don't want it to go away. You always want people to see that you did that, you know?
Yeah, we have the same thing on the homepage. If we do it like an interview with somebody that's like really freaking cool, and we put the graphic up in there, but it's like weeks go by and we're like, all right, now the page is getting bigger as we're adding them. It's like, you don't want to take that one off the page because you're like, God damn, that was such a great talk we had with that person. But like, yeah, then you got to take it off and a little like kind of put the little stab in the middle heart. But, you know, got to do what you got to do.
That's why it's cool that you guys have station IDs, though, too, because that stuff will live forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sweet.
Well, I'll tell you, it's great to hook up with you and talk about that. And, of course, we are super psyched that, you know, the album coming out this week. Obviously, you know, huge new album fans, and, you know, definitely wish you guys the best of luck getting that thing out to the world. And we are definitely going to do our best as well to spread the word far and wide and make sure everybody gets into Night Demon.
Yeah, thanks, man. We really do appreciate that. We appreciate everything that you guys are doing. We'll be up in Boston area, hopefully in June, maybe even Worcester. I'm not sure, but it's definitely, we were in Providence, this month, and it was a great show. We had a lot of people come up from the area and come check out the show. But we're looking for a show in Boston proper, you know, and we want to come in there and kick some ass.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Jarvis, you guys, when you go to Europe, your style of music is going to kill it over there.
Yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, we went last year and it went really well, but we were a new band on the scene, and now, you know, people have had some time to live with the EP and the records out, and we've been getting a lot of great reviews out there. So I'm really curious to see how this is going to go. You know, again, we got some big time booking agent over there who did absolutely fucking nothing for us. So we ended up just leaving him. You know, all the other bands are staying with him, we're just like, nah, it's not for us. You know, he doesn't understand what we're trying to do. I mean, we live on the road. We do live this life. That's the only way we do this. We're essentially homeless too, but we're loving it. You know, yeah. I mean, we don't starve. I'm not trying to say that, but we don't have any ties because we have to live this life and be gone all the time. The road is home. Right. So we do a lot of DIY things. And on this tour, we booked it ourselves. We're like, you know, we could set this up, man. We can play, you know, we're going to be playing some basements and shit too, but we don't care because it's with the right bands and the right fans and the right people.
Yeah.
And like, we're bringing it back, man. Like the time is now. People, you know, we live day to day in this, and we want people to be excited about what we're doing. You know, and I don't know if our fans at this point are going to be excited if, you know, if we're on a big tour with like Nightwish or something. Like, I don't think it matters to them. You know, if to us, it's like, oh, we're playing in front of 20,000 new people in Sweden. But really, I mean, what's the heart of the band is its current fans, you know, and giving them, you know, what they deserve. Coming, you know, we go to very, very, very small towns in Germany and in America, you know, and people think, they always tell us, man, I never, ever, ever thought you would come to my town. I just never thought you would, you know? And so to be there and do that is much more rewarding on, in the grand scheme of things and the longevity of the band, you know, instead of just going to do something where you think, you know, oh, we're going to get big or whatever, you know, that's never really been a goal of ours. We've already surpassed, you know, where we wanted to be at this point. And I think it's the way we've done it has been working for us, and the support's there, you know, so we just want to go and do our thing to people that appreciate it.
Nice.
Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you, Jarvis.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for the interview. Sorry if I was rambling. I get excited when I talk to guys who know what the hell they're talking about.
No, that's okay. That's why we, you know, want to get you on, and the more people hear what you guys have to say, that's really what we want. I mean, people listen to us every week. We really want to let them know what the bands have to say.
I really appreciate it, and I really look forward to actually meeting you guys in person and having a beer and playing some music for you guys.
Awesome. Great. That'd be great.
That'd be fantastic.
All right, man. Have a all great right. rest of the night, all right?
You guys take it easy, okay?
All right, we'll thanks.
Stay warm.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Stay warm, my ass. On the day that I'm mixing this show, it is 20 degrees with like a minus 11 wind chill outside and more snow on the way within the next 12 hours. So no staying warm here. Okay, so there you go. Our talk with Jarvis Leatherby from Night Demon. Of course, in the middle of that, we did play a song off Curse of the Dam. That is the track Run for Your Life. And so between the talk and that track, if that doesn't get you into wanting to go out and pick up that album, well, how about if we throw in one more track off of Curse of the Damned? And this one is called Screams in the Night. That is a wrap for this week. Stick a fork in it. This one's done. Any last words, Richie?
No. Great to be back. More metal on the way.
Oh, I know. You've been busy. Been busy lining things up.
Yeah. I'm being a bit more selective this time.
Yeah.
In who I'm going after. And I've got someone lined up. We're supposed to be talking to at the end of the month. And it's a little bit different, I think, than what we've done in the past. It's not an album the guy's promoting. It's a show that he's doing, I think, which is a really cool show.
Hmm.
And he's part of it. And hopefully that'll come together and we can talk to him about that.
Awesome.
But yeah, and then the usual bit of chat here and there and, you know, interviews here or there.
Yep, absolutely.
And then we've the project to...
That's right. Yes, I've yet to start editing audio on that yet.
So. Again, apologies.
So, all right. Well, as usual... You can follow us at focusonmetal.net as well as focusonmetal.blogspot.com and twitter.com/focusonmetal. And I hope you guys are continuing to enjoy everything that we're doing here as we go into 2015. So it's always fun on our end, and hopefully same for you guys as well. So with that, have yourselves a good metal week. And remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.